Coming up on American Parlor Songbook, join us for sketches, stories, and songs from Lake Arrowhead. We'll beg for change or rattle our jewelry on a show about economic class. JP tells a true childhood tale, we uncover another lost propaganda reel, and singer Joey Chrisman performs his acoustic blues.
Hold on, Julie, I think that's too many things. We can't afford all those segments.
What do you want to cut?
What do we have again?
Sketches, stories, songs, and guests.
Yeah, we could probably do without the sketches, right?
All right. Coming up on APS, stories, songs, and guests.
Just one guest.
Stories, songs, and guest.
You are bleeding this budget dry, you monster.
Oh, okay. Coming up, story and a song.
No songs, too expensive.
Coming up, a story.
It's a parlor, not a palace, Julie. Come on.
Coming up on American Parlor Songbook, 52 minutes of dead air and a general sense of desperation.
That's better.
From the Tudor House Theater in Lake Arrowhead, California, this is American Parlor Songbook with your host at the piano, J.P. Houston!
Hey, thank you, folks. And as always, on the other microphone, that actually it's a hairbrush because we can't afford a microphone, Julie Van Dusen. Class, the rich versus the poor, your Bezos versus your Bozos, Gates versus Ains, haves and have-nots, a chasm wider than a pair of Walmart sweatpants. Tax the rich, some say, you know, tax the rich more and give it to the poor. The others say tax them less so they can hire the poor, feed the poor, feed the poor to the rich. No, wait, that was Soylent Green. It's been said that money isn't everything. It's not, you know, everything, but it's definitely something. I'm reasonably certain that being rich is probably all that it's cracked up to be. It is, after all, nicer to cry into a silk hanky than a roll of one-ply you snuck out of the office bathroom in your coat 2 feet at a time. I'm not saying the rich are bad, though, just privileged, you know, lucky even. Well, they say it's all about hard work, but statistically, you stay in the class you were born in. Not me, though. I have no class. Boom, dad joke. Chorus.
There's a line that's drawn between the haves and nots. Yeah, it's winding through the city streets from block to block. From the mansion on the hill to the van down by the docks. One man's trading stocks for bread, the other's breaking rocks. I said hard knocks.
In ancient Rome, well, they didn't make any bones about it. If you weren't a patrician, you were a plebeian. The patricians were a small group of ruling families descended from the first 100 senators appointed by Romulus in the 8th century BC, of which Dianne Feinstein was one. If you were a plebe, you were pretty much relegated to doing, you know, all the actual work. Late in the game, though, the income equality got so out of whack, it started to tear at the fabric of the society, right? A couple of senators, though, they tried some populist reform in the Senate, led by Bernius Sandersicus. Actually, it was a pair of brothers. They were Gracchus, I think. They were thwarted by the upper-class senators through straight-up murder. That was part of the game then. You just killed them. All in favor say die. All opposed say nay. Only the horses answered, so they strung them up. It was a big mistake, though, because, well, they didn't fix the problems, and soon enough, the empire crumbled. As always, don't quote me on any of this. I'm a piano player, not a historian. Anyway, it all fell apart. It always goes that way, or sometimes the more violent way, you know, where the poor rise up and just tear the place apart. You know, like the let them eat cake moments in history, tumbling statues, falling walls, people in the streets. The French Revolution, of course, they famously stormed the Bastille. I'm not sure what a Bastille is, but boy, did they storm it. Kicked off a whole revolution. It cascaded around the world, undoing absolute monarchies everywhere, and it changed the course of history. Actually, I see here that the Bastille was a state prison, so it was a symbol of the rule of the rich. I wonder what we'd storm now. Facebook? Amazon? I can't imagine that in the history books. And thousands of peasants took to their phones to write absolutely scathing reviews of various mail-order knickknacks.
There's a line that's drawn between the haves and nots. Yeah, it's winding through the city streets from block to block, from the mansion on the hill to the van down by the docks. One man's trading stocks for bread, the other's breaking rocks. I said, hard knocks.
So, what's it like being rich? I don't know exactly, but I did have that one week where I found 20 bucks in the pocket of a thrift store jacket. I used it to buy the jacket. Free money, free jacket, right? That's probably what it's like to be super wealthy. All those wearables, consumables, playables, everything. The cost would be just so small, such a small slice of your net worth as to be perceivably free. If you do the math, trust me, I didn't, I just Googled it, but if you do the math, it's something like 4,000 bucks for your average small-time billionaire. Feels like $1 to you, right? So it'd feel like 3 bucks for your entire food budget every year, or 150 bucks, it buys you a whole large middle-class house. So you can start to see how they might lose touch with the struggles of the common person, right? You know, you'd get further and further away, moving in your own circles, protected, high above in a private jet. Maybe you can see how, well, everybody'd start to look like ants down there. Look, I'm not trying to empathize with the billionaires or anything. I'm just saying that it just might happen to you, too. Yeah, you'd say, give me that money, yeah, all that green money. Don't beg, you lose. You know I worked harder than all yous. Please excuse. I got carried away. Being poor, on the other hand, you tend to get mad at the fat cats, right? You depersonalize them, and you hyper-personalize it. You know, he's out to get you. He's out to get specifically you. I don't know, maybe he is. You know, sometimes they get all philanthropic. They try to patch up that image a bit, win your favor. If you think I'm about to make a biting commentary on the true intentions of philanthropy, think again. Dear Mr. Gates, please go right ahead and philanthropy all over me and this show and all the public radio stations carrying this program. You're great, and we love you so much. If you can't sycophant a philanthrope, then who can you? Which brings me to my next order of business. This program is made possible with support from Panda Bear Cigarettes, delicious and choky, ask your parents for a pack today. And by the Billionaire Philanthropic Society. Here's some money, don't overthrow us, the Billionaire Philanthropic Society. And now rejecting new memberships at www.don'tbother.org.com. So, we're going to divide and conquer this week, see if we can't see who makes what. Stick around, you can afford it.
There's a line that's drawn between the haves and nots. Yeah, it's winding through the city streets from block to block, from the mansion on the hill to the van down by the docks. One man's trading stocks for bread, the other's breaking rocks. I said, hard knocks.
And as always, if you are offended by something you hear on the program this week, you can tweet me directly. If you're wealthy, include a check made out to the J.P. Houston, and you never know, you just might get a response on the air. As a poor person, I have to admit that I don't have scruples, and I'll find a penny any way I can, in the couch, on the street, or on the radio, as it were, by playing songs that I wrote in order to collect residuals. So here's a song that I wrote in leaner times. It's about a panhandler asking for change for a song. He looks a lot like me.
To sell you but a song. trying to take me on. Just a stone for my bow. But y'all are already here. So when the house lights disappear, you got nothing for to lend me but your ear.
Just be on my way. Yeah, maybe one more. This episode of American Parlor Songbook is made possible with support from Sky Park at Santa's Village, a North Pole-themed adventure park in Lake Arrowhead, California. Archery, biking, zip lining, and more, open year-round and decorated for the holiday season. Information at skyparksantasvillage.com. Stick around, we'll be right back. American Parlor Songbook is now available on PRX, and we're excited to be adding some new stations this season. Well, we're always looking for more ways to subvert the airwaves, so information is available on our website about how to suggest or request a local broadcast. We're also recording live episodes all year, bringing the program and our guests to venues all across Southern California. Our schedule is available online at our website, AmericanParlorSongbook.com.
From the bayou to the beltway, from snow country to southland, everywhere you look, all walks of life are weaving together into the fabric of the economy of the future. The baker, the banker, the teacher, dishwasher, the socialite famous for that video, and yes, even the paperboy.
Even me?
Why, of course, Billy. You're one of the principal foundations of the whole system.
Hard work and an essential service?
No. Back-breaking labor at below minimum wage.
Minimum what now?
Don't worry about it, Billy. Just make sure those papers arrive by 5 a.m.
And if I don't?
The robots will, of course.
You mean like my aunt called my uncle at Thanksgiving because he, quote, didn't have any feelings?
Not exactly. I'll show you. Follow me.
Where are we going?
To the future! Look, Billy. Down there. Who's that handsome go-getter?
Hey, that's me!
There he is. Look at him.
Hey, what's that doohickey in my hand?
That's called a smartphone.
What's it do?
Pictures of lunch, political arguments with distant relatives, and pornography.
Well, that doesn't sound too smart.
Oh, look, Billy, it's time for lunch. You better count up that Bitcoin.
The what now?
Bitcoin. It's the currency of the future. worth $1 million each, or $50,000 each, $50 and 1 cent, now nothing.
Aw, shoot. How am I going to pay for that coffee?
Just add it to the tab at the company store.
The company's got a store?
The company is a store.
Wait, I'm lost.
The whole world is the store and the company.
Let me guess, you want me to follow you now?
No, don't get smart, Billy. This way.
Wow, look at all those goods and services.
Delivery, food, appliances, books, transportation.
Everyone contributing and trading in a vibrant economy.
Mm.
Every eager entrepreneur gets their turn.
No, it's all one company now.
Even that school teacher?
Oh, yes. Amazon bought the Board of Education, too.
Ain't that a, whatchamacallit, a monopoly?
Billy, the Bezos will hear you.
Is he like the wizard?
Yes, only balder and scarier.
But the wizard turned out to be just a giant nerd behind a curtain.
Yes, you've got the gist.
So everybody works for him?
Mostly robots. In the future, they're the manufacturers, drivers, farmers, accountants, and babysitters.
Aw, so what does that make me?
Soylent Green or Chocolate Rain, take your pick.
I guess I'll go chocolate.
Perfect. Into the meat grinder, Billy.
Nice knowing ya.
Yes, in the economy of tomorrow, the future looks so bright. Sunglasses are available in the online store. All hail the Bezos, Soylent Green is people.
How about a song from our good friend, Joey Crisman?
There's a hole in my chest where my heart was from some girl that I burned over me. There's a honky tonk somewhere playing my song with so much for my lonesome memory. There's a grave in my head full of roses, and the pain, bittersweet misery. There's a line that I cross somewhere along the wall, but so much for my lonesome memory. Well, I hope you found what you were looking for. Now everybody knows it wasn't me. I wore out my welcome down at the liquor store. There's so much for my lonesome memory.
Our next guest is an old friend of mine from Montreal, Canada. Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Creef.
Mm-hmm.
constant shine and fade away. Just wanna save you. Got no money, no place to call my home. I'm just trying to stay alive. Don't wanna let you go. Don't wanna let you down. I just wanna save you. Don't let real life pull you away. It can enslave you. On a lifeboat, not built to let you drown. It just barely gets you by. Don't wanna let you go. Don't wanna let you down. I just wanna save you. Who's gonna save you? Who's gonna save you? I can't replace you. They can get by without. Don't wanna let you go. I don't wanna let you go. Don't wanna let you down. I just wanna save you.
Patrick Freak, how about that? The streets rose and fell on steep hills, lined with little Victorians, duplexes, right? And once a block, a bungalow, green and treed, and all in a perfect grid. The Far East End wound on like the rest of the city until the ravine. Beyond there, the houses grew big, and the grass was even greener. Now, by about the sixth grade, your once cute and innocent kids, they take a big leap towards terrible teens. Status creeps in. Cool becomes currency. Currency becomes cool, right? And things can get downright mean about it. When I was a kid, keeping up was key because it was the 1980s when everyone got rich. The insurance agent, the commissioned appliance guy, the mechanic, teachers flipping houses on the side. There was plenty for everybody, and everybody wanted some. Mom came up frugal and Italian with a leftover Depression-era stinge. The farm family in the old country was already cheap enough as they were, right? And then they landed pregnant in the Depression, in the 1930s, Mom was permanently on scrimp mode with a claw-like grip on the purse. I think she did her own perms at home with a paper bag and some starch. And she held on to that 1970s Italian afro for all the way through the 80s, pretty much. It was too expensive to change. And she needed it for that height, right, because she was short, so with the 4-inch heels and the perm, she'd almost topple 5 feet. She'd teeter around on those heels, top-heavy at the head like a Paisan Weeble. Now, there was the brand, and then there was the competitor, a little less, and then there was the knockoff all the way at the bottom. You know, your Sony, Sanyo, Sony hierarchy. My hometown had a store that specialized in the latter. It was called bargain Harolds, you know, fake polo shirts, phony Walkmans, something called Nicky shoes with upside-down swooshes on them. If you so much as got caught with a bargain Harolds bag at school, you were finished, right? And where else would a stingy mom shop but bargain Harolds? I was halfway down the hall before I spotted it. There on the side of the plastic bag, Cartoon Harold with the green Scottish hat, right? And then I heard it, the chant started, you know, the kid voice heckle, bargain Harold. I scrambled to turn the bag inside out. It was too late. I was bargain basement from now, and I'd never get across the ravine into one of those big houses, not for a birthday party, not even for a post-school snack. I kept my head down for the rest of the day, put on my Sony Walkman and bootleg cassette right at 3:15, and I beeline for the street. Just get on the bus, go home, wait it out. You'll be back on the cool list inside the semester. Deep gulp, go to the bus stop. Up to the stop, and there's the gaggle of ravine kids, right? The rich kids, real polo shirts, Ray-Bans, popped collars, you know. And then, alone, there at the end of the bench, dressed in the only thing less than knockoffs, the Goodwill mix and match. A red-headed girl that the whole school referred to as Annie. If I saddled up close, well, I thought to myself that they'll target her instead of me, right? I'll deflect, slide onto the bench, and then they start to mumble, snickering and mocking. They're snickering and mocking her, and my heart sunk. That poor kid, that poor, poor kid, really poor. Not my middle-class, cheap mom poor, but authentic wrong-side-of-the-tracks poor. And there are these kids, the cool ones, only cool because they were born over there, looking down on her, past me, down on her. No, I was raised on Mr. Rogers as good as the next kid. I'm not made of stone, and I know what's right. Hey, Vicky, because that was her real name. You want me to walk from the bus with you? It was an extra couple of blocks the wrong way, but no big deal, right? A good deed. Make a friend. She sighs and says, fine. So with the gang of jerks jeering from the bus, I got off two stops too soon, and I walked away with Annie. Reputation be damned, right? Her yard was riddled with busted up bikes, a truck tire, a homemade sign that read, beware of dogs. Next to a little chihuahua on a chain tied to a peg, and it ran around, got excited, around and around, closer and closer, until it wound up right next to the peg there. And then it just kind of stopped and looked at me. The porch creaked up to the dangling screen door and into the meager living room to do my middle-class white kid do-gooder penance, right? Ooh la la, who's the rich kid? The 14-year-old brother with the bad teenage mustache pipes up, looking at my imitation Walkman. She just rolls her eyes like, I don't know, he just followed me in here. Hey, it's Richie Rich, look at his shoes. Another brother chimes in from the steps, upside down swooshes. And then a sister from the kitchen, you dating a Rockefeller now, Vic? He just followed me home, all right? And then all 12 of them, so they start in, right? Richie Rich, Richie Rich. Now I'm the rich kid, right? And these kids are all over me. Can't we all just get along? I plead. I back away, Richie Rich. And then I make a break for it, out the screen door, then thump down the rickety steps, past the dog, and on down the street. I suppose the moral here is, there's always somebody richer, and there's always somebody poorer. And everybody, I mean everybody, just plain doesn't like anybody above them or below them.
Tracks cross a cluttered up yard. Times are hard, playing catch with the sun, shoot jacks with the stars when the world was ours.
APS is on Twitter at Parlor Songbook. And you can find information about the program on our website, AmericanParlorSongbook.com. Now, we love hearing from our listeners, and there's a contact link there on the page. Sometimes I'll even answer your letters in a song on the air. So, if you need advice, or it's your grandmother's 100th birthday, or you just plain want to tell us how much you hate the program, just write J.P. Houston Sings in the subject line, and you never know, you just might get a response on the air.
Good afternoon. This is Small Things Considerable, and I'm Robert Beagle. Americans are still struggling to find their financial footing in the period following the Great Recession, the most calamitous economic period for this country since the Great Depression in the 1930s. Today, we speak with a man who has just published a memoir of his unique experience of that turbulent chapter of American history, entitled Riches to Rags, The Horace L. Phelps Story. Horace L. Phelps, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you are 100 years old. Looking good, champ.
Thank you. That sounded sincere.
You were born in 1915, making you 14 when the market crashed. Paint a picture of that time for us.
Well, Robert, let me explain that my father, Leslie H. Phelps, was one of the fattest cats on Wall Street. We were extremely wealthy, mother, father, and I. We lived in an 80-room mansion by Central Park. We had a French upstairs maid, and for the downstairs, a maid from the Antipodes for geographical symmetry.
I see.
And in the attic we had an Eskimo maid, and in the basement we had a mole person maid. Anyway, you could see me strutting around town with a $5 sucker. Biggest sucker you ever seen. In fact, it was too big for me to carry by myself. I would pay other boys to carry it for me, and then instill other boys to lick it for me.
Tell us about the day the market crashed.
The day the market went boom, I'll never forget. Father and I were in his office playing cards. Favorite game, 52 pickup. He would just flip all 52 cards at me and he'd say, pick them up, son. And I would laugh, and I would pick them up every time. And a knock came on the door, and I answered it, and it was a telegram boy. And he handed me the telegram, and I was holding a $5 sucker with both hands, and so I handed that to him, and he took it from me, and I went over to Father, and Father opened up the telegram with his Donald Duck letter opener, very new. Donald Duck was a new character. And he looked at the telegram when a twinkle came into his eye, and he had his rich baritone chuckle. He go, and he said, oh, Leslie, you're in it now. There's only one proper response to this. And I didn't know what it said, but he folded it up and he put it in his breast pocket. And he strode right past me and past the telegraph boy and into the elevator where our elevator man, Syracuse, is waiting. And Syracuse said, where to, boss? And Father said, well, he winked at me. Father winked at me and he said, just once around the block, Syracuse. And with that, he reached over and he released the cable and they both plummeted 15 stories to their death, just like that.
I can't imagine. That must have been devastating for you.
No, you know, if you could have seen the grin on that split second before he plummeted, you would know that he was going out in his mind on his own terms, going out on top. With Father, it was his way or no way at all. And, you know, it brings a smile to my face just thinking about him and what he did.
You're telling me that seeing your own father's suicide didn't affect you.
Well, Father, like many wealthy socialites in the 20s, believed in reincarnation. And so, you know, he might have thought he was coming back as a squid or an elephant or something. In fact, Mother believed in it so much, that for years after his passing, she would bring home stray animals that she would find, and she would insist that they were him until proven otherwise. And at one point, we had 153 animals, cats, dogs, budgies, turtles, all referred to as Leslie by her, and they all shared her bed.
Now, just as a side note, what about Syracuse?
Well, what about him?
I mean...
Oh, he got up and walked away. He was just fine. What do you think? He died, too.
Well, wasn't that rather thoughtless of your father?
Well, you see, a man of my father's stature, you know, it's like the pharaohs of Egypt. He wasn't about to leave this world without his right-hand man by his side. And,
Well, how long had Syracuse worked for the family?
2 months.
All right, then. Your father, the breadwinner of the Phelps family fortune, Leslie H. Phelps, is no more. What happened to you next?
Well, Mother and I, we had the family lawyer look into the state of our affairs, and it turned out every last thing we owned was in the form of stocks. We didn't actually own any physical thing. We rented the mansion, the limousine, our clothes. In fact, I couldn't remember a time that he used cash in day-to-day life. It was common when we went out to dinner, Father to simply hand shares of stock to the waiter, or when buying a newspaper, he would give a share of stock. You know, much as you might find change or a dollar on the ground now, people would just find stock on the ground in the 20s.
Sounds like a shaky foundation.
Yes, and yet we lived like fat cats. Father believed that money was a kinetic thing, a moving thing, and that you shouldn't bother having any concrete wealth. We never owned anything but stock. And then later we found out that the day of the crash, he had done a massive trade of everything we owned for the controlling interest of just one company, the K.L. Dude Ranch of Arizona.
The K.L. Dude Ranch of Arizona?
The K.L. Dude Ranch of Arizona. And it was just 500 square miles of scrubland with not a single redeeming feature, except that it just happened to coincide with the little struggling town of Phoenix experiencing a real estate boom. The swamp coolers had just been made popularly available, and it made living in Phoenix, you know, viable. And so we made a killing.
Congratulations. I'm curious, though. The title of your book is Riches to Rags, and so far it seems that you experienced only riches and then more riches. Tell us about when the rags came into play.
Robert, I was a young man when my father passed, and I got my first car. It was a hot rod, and it was a Bentley. It could go 45 miles an hour, which was nuts in those days. And I was a little hellion, free to roam New York City and the Hamptons. I caused trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Well, as you read in the book, I racked up a lot of debt.
Well, how? Did you have a gambling problem? Or
what happened, Robert, was... parking tickets. Many, many parking tickets.
How much were parking tickets in the early 1930s?
A nickel or so.
That doesn't sound unmanageable.
Well, you see, it wasn't just me. My mother also was racking them up, and we had a problem. I would go up to Little Italy, and I'd park there, and I'd get a ticket, and then I'd go to Chinatown, and I'd just park right where I knew it was illegal, and I'd get a ticket, and then I'd go in front of a fire hydrant, and oh, boy, the cops would just look me in the eye, and I'd look them right back, as if to say, oh, yeah, copper, you write that ticket. I just didn't care, Robert, and by the end of the 30s, it was, we're talking about millions of dollars worth of parking tickets, millions of 1930s dollars. And it was looking bad. We were divesting, and Mother had sold two of her cars, and she was parking better, but not me. We'd sold almost all of the property in Arizona, and just then we had a little bit left, just a scrub mountain, and the Department of War called us up and said, we've discovered uranium on your mountain. Would you like to lease it to us? We said, sure, what's uranium?
And
oh, let me tell you, it sounds like you hit the gold mine. Or better yet, the uranium mine. You know, no one wanted gold. So that sounds like you still didn't really hit the rags. Well, no, I didn't. I almost did, and then I didn't. And I remain rich to this day. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, rags or no rags. Thank you, Horace L. Phelps. The book is Riches to Rags, The Horace L. Phelps Story. And now back to Small Things Considerable. I'm Robert Beagle.
And that was, of course, a studio piece from our good friend, comedian Stephen Benequist, stephenbenequist.com. Our next guest is a great singer-songwriter. We're always happy when he can join us. From Joshua Tree, California, Ryan Erskine.
Scatting on down the street, I feel the rhythm move my body to the beat. Can't you feel it in the summer heat? Don't you wanna just tap your feet? Come on, mama, and get out of your seat. Don't you wanna just dance with me? So come up on the floor, 'cause that's what song and dance is for. Oh yeah, for everyone to share. Moving steady on through the night, grooving with your mama makes me feel alright. Well, this party is out of sight, it's getting heavy in the candlelight. Your love has got me flying higher than a kite. We're dancing on until the morning light, and don't it feel so good? Loving like I know we should. Place our troubles on the shelf, you and me and everybody else. We're putting off into the atmosphere and picking up vibrations we can feel. Well, this love is really real, it's clear to me, and it's dear to me, so dear to me, yeah.
Sing along. It's real simple.
La da 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 da. La da 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 da. La da 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 da. La da 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 da. You gotta get down, you gotta get down. So take it from the kid. Music is a special kind of digs. It does wonders for the health, for you and me and everybody. You and me and everybody. You and me and everybody else. So go see it for yourself. For you and me and everybody else.
That's our show. Thanks for listening to American Parlor Songbook. We'll return next week with a fun show. Be sure to tune in. APS is produced by the American Parlor Company, presented by KVCR, and available on PRX. You can find information about the program by visiting our website.
Window.
Yes, Martha, what is it?
Pass me that silk glove. I need to wipe my nose.
Might I suggest a tissue?
You mightn't.
Well, it just seems wasteful is all.
A lady doesn't use tissue.
No, a lady uses her glove.
If it's made of silk, yes.
Why not a handkerchief?
Oh, that's disgusting, Wendell. Using the same old rag over and over?
No, as opposed to the glove.
I throw those out, dummy.
Wait, every time you wipe your nose, it costs us a silk glove.
I didn't win 2 daytime Emmys and a SAG award to blow my nose in paper.
Well, you may have to hawk those statues if you keep up this spending.
Look around Darn you, Wendell, we're rich.
Oh, we're rich, we're.
What are you talking about? That denture commercial brought in $100,000 last month.
Yes, and it cost us $150,000.
But the publicity was priceless.
I fail to see how a settlement for assaulting that poor director was good press.
Did you see the footage?
Which, swinging from the crane or getting dragged away by security shouting Attica?
That's hilarious.
They say he's going to have a limp, you know.
It's better than that swish he used to walk with.
Oh, $150,000 swish, apparently.
Whatever, there's plenty more where that came from.
Oh, have you looked at the accounts?
That's your job, Wendell. I spend, you count.
Oh, I would if there was any.
What about the royalty account?
Sybil II the Scrambling is hardly in heavy television rotation these days.
Oh, those were my best 27 roles.
And worth $1.17 last quarter. One airing on the Mongolian Late Show.
Those Eurasians always got me.
Your inexplicable popularity in Central Asia is not going to cover the expenses, Martha.
Sure it will. We'll just make that Genghis Khan picture I've been pitching.
Oh, a female Genghis Khan, sure.
Do you really have any doubt that I can pillage, Wendell?
After the way you ransacked Tiffany's last weekend, I have no doubt.
I was just buying a few knickknacks.
Who in the world needs a gold-plated spatula?
I do.
Is that why you threw it at the clerk?
He called me old.
He said he remembers you in those old movies.
Ipso facto, old.
Well, perhaps if you were younger, your aim would have been better.
My aim is perfect.
You missed him by 20 feet and shattered $10,000 worth of crystal.
But the spatula was intact.
It's a good thing with all that cooking you never do.
I cook at least 20 cigarettes a day.
Wait. Are you under the impression that tobacco is food?
It's on the pyramid, isn't it?
What pyramid?
The Dean Martin food pyramid. Cigarettes, pills, and liquor.
You are aware that was a Mad Magazine cartoon, right?
I still have it in my purse to show those pushy doctors.
The ones who remove your suntan melanomas at $2,000 a pop?
I have to have a healthy glow, Wendell.
Like Chernobyl.
I'm a natural beauty.
Natural?
Okay. A few nips and tucks.
Your last tuck set us back 60,000.
I'm a model, Wendell. It's deductible.
We don't need deductions. We need income.
All right, fine. I'll do it.
Do what?
The Real Housewives.
What are you talking about?
I'll just call up Randall and get on one of those housewives shows.
What makes you think that goon can get you on television?
He knows people.
Oh, like who?
Leif Garrett.
1970s teen idol Leif Garrett is going to get you on television.
Why not?
Don't you think he'd get himself on television first?
He was just on Fantasy Island.
That was 1977.
What year is it now?
2018.
Oh, good Lord.
Yes, you've been blowing through our savings for 40 years.
It can't be that bad.
It is.
How bad?
I sold my Fabergé eggs.
Oh, God.
The accounts are empty, Martha.
So it's all gone?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, no. Am I going to have to wear soot on my face and pick pockets?
Not unless it's 19th century England, no.
Wendell, I don't know how to be poor.
Well, you'll have to start by wearing zirconia instead of diamonds.
Oh, kill me now.
And no more imported caviar. It's local fish eggs from now on.
Oh, the horror.
And Martha, you'll have to stop crashing parties and wrecking cars.
I'll be in the garage drinking antifreeze.
Oh, don't be melodramatic.
But Wendell, what are we going to do?
We are going to tighten up the purse strings a little.
What about the house? Oh, please say we can keep the house.
Okay, Martha, listen. I'm going to tell you some good news now.
Leif Garrett came through.
No, it's better. But first, you have to promise me that you'll be more careful with money.
I knew it, you precious miser, you. Oh, you've squirreled away an emergency fund, haven't you?
You have to promise, Martha.
All right, I promise.
Do you remember that little hit I composed back in 79?
Disco Turkey.
Chicken.
Chicken.
Well, it just so happens that I opened an account, and for 36 years, all the royalties from Disco Chicken have been gathering there.
God bless you and your mediocre dance floor hit.
Oh, that mediocre hit has made a small fortune.
So, I'm rich?
Yes, Martha, you're rich.
Oh, thank God.
Not that rich.
Rich enough to knock over a cake and punch Larry King in the face?
Yes, but not rich enough to steal his Rolls Royce and crash it into the fountain.
Okay, I can handle that.
Well, good. Now, let's get some rest and have a nice expensive breakfast in the morning.
With champagne?
One glass.
Perfect.
Yes, dear. Night, night, then.
Don't cheap out on me now, Wendell.
Wait, what do you mean?
You have to sing me my lullaby.
Oh, all right. We can afford one verse.
Martha, the sun has bowed its head. Our friends have all gone home to bed. We've burned the candle end to end. Remember what I've said time and time again. Every evening ends, but you don't need to fret. I'll hold you through the night. Sleep tight, my love. Good night. Good night.